Hey, I'm Roy Wood Jr. I'm a stand-up comedian. I'm a correspondent on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. I'm a father. I'm a Sagittarius. And I have a podcast called Roy's Job Fair. This show is a therapy session for anybody who's looking for work, wants to slap somebody at work, or is hiring somebody to work for them so that eventually they can slap you too. One part laughs, one part inspiration. I cannot wait to welcome you to Roy's Job Fair on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Following is a paid program on 630 WLAP. This is the Tom Dupree Show on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.
Welcome to the camp. I guess you all know why we're here. My name is Tommy. I became aware this year. If you want to follow me, you've got to play pinball. And put in your earplugs, put on your eye shades. You know where to put the cork. We're not gonna take it.
I see the morning coming in your eyes. Jubilee, Jubilee. It's shining brighter than the sun in the sky. Jubilee, Jubilee. I hear your joy bells ringing in your voice. Jubilee, Jubilee. Your kind of singing cutting through the noise. Jubilee, Jubilee.
Welcome to the Tom Dupree Show. This week we are coming to you from Clay City, Kentucky. We've taken the show on the road. Joining us this week, Larry Meadows and Ovi Holland with the Red River Museum. We've got lots of fun things to share with you. So without further ado, Tom Dupree, you're on.
Okay. I'll start off with the psalm, Psalm 60. Oh God, thou hast cast us off. Thou hast scattered us. Thou hast been displeased. Oh, turn thyself to us again. Thou hast made the earth to tremble. Thou hast broken it. Heal the branches thereof, for it shaketh. Thou hast showed thy people hard things. Thou hast made us to drink the wine of astonishment. Thou hast given us a banner to them that fear thee, that it may be displayed because of the truth. Selah. That thy beloved may be delivered, save with thy right hand, and hear me. God has spoken in his holiness. I will rejoice. I will divide Shechem and mete out the valley of Succoth. Gilead is mine and Manasseh is mine. Ephraim also is the strength of my head. Judah is my lawgiver. Moab is my washpot. Over Edom will I cast out my shoe. Through God we shall do valiantly, for it is he that shall tread down our enemies. That's Psalm 60, or parts of it. I have become acquainted with the Red River Museum and Larry Meadows for a few years through my good friend Bill Ambrose, who was up here doing research on the railroad, and got to know Larry, and I've become very impressed with his incredible encyclopedic knowledge of history, and also with his real interest and fervor, I would call it, for finding petroglyph sites throughout several counties in this area, identifying them, cataloging them, and making efforts to protect them from vandals and theft. I just really feel like this is a great place, and I love the people up here associated with the museum. Larry, I guess I would like to ask, tell me a little bit about the history of how the museum began and the reasons for why it began.
Well, thank you, Mr. DeBree. About in the 1960s, a group of us, we just decided that we got interested in historical things. There's so much history in the area, and we thought, well, you know, we need to start checking into this and start preserving it. So it seemed like we all kind of had the same common interests, and of course, through the years, we went from one thing to another. And as one thing gets a little bit boring, well, we change to something else, and always end up being trying to capitalize on the rich local history of this area. I think compared to other areas, we've been blessed with having so many things to work on. Of course, the Red River Gorge being nearby, and all through the years prior to the, say, the 1965 is when we really got cranking down on that. We need to stay together, and maybe one of these days we could have a museum. Even though it's never been professionally paid or sponsored by the government, nevertheless, we decided this would be a worthy trip, and we have.
Okay. The museum itself is located in a historic building. Tell me a little bit about the building.
Well, the building that we have been in and put our focus, maybe not in the first days, we only rented the upstairs to start off with, and we did that in late 1965. And then from there, we weren't permanent for a while. And I'll have to say the Kentucky Heritage Council, that they were the ones that influenced us to stay with the architect of one of the most still standing historic buildings in the whole county, and that was the old Clay City National Bank building. And of course, that building we know now was built in 1889, became a bank in January of 1890, and served as a bank and institution for 54 years. And in 1944, it was liquidated. That was a couple of years after the train went out of Clay City and everything was sort of falling apart as far as business.
Yeah. Let me ask you this question. You all took possession of the building. You all own that building now.
We do now, yes.
Okay. Tell me about the collection. You've got so many interesting things in there, but it seems to follow kind of a pattern or a theme, if you will. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, one of the things, of course, is we've been most interested in local history. However, people do bring things in that have some kind of a maybe even indirect connection, and that's okay. If they want to donate that, we accept that too.
Right.
Another thing we do, if someone wants to just loan us, that's okay. We don't make any provision on them that they have to donate it because it's in there.
Right.
And we will give that back. Most people don't ask for it back, but when they do, we're always willing. We've never made any controversy about returning that, even if it's a descendant of the person who had passed away.
But it has to have some historical significance for you to put it in the museum.
Yes, yes, we do.
Okay.
We want some kind of historical significance.
Ovi, how would you add to that?
Well, a few of the collections that we do have that are of a special significance, the Millstone collection. We have one of the
right.
most complete collections, I guess, in the eastern United States. Locally, there was a quarry that milled the stone, so that's kind of touches on the historical significance. The Cooper Shop, I'm a woodworker, so I'm particularly interested in that. We have demonstrations out there, and it's interesting to see.
Well, that's a barrel maker's shop, in other words.
No, this was actually a wagon maker's carriage.
Oh, okay. Wagon wheel maker.
Right. Wheelwright shop, I guess, is what it's called, isn't it, Larry?
Yes.
Yeah. And so that's another one of the collections. Inside, it's various and sundry, no particular theme, but like Larry said, it does have to have historical significance. Some of the things that we're actually in a part of the renovation right now and repair. And it's interesting finding things from the 1890s that you don't have a clue what they are and trying to identify.
Have you ever had somebody just show up with something you just completely had no idea what it was?
All the time.
Tell about that, if you would.
Well, one of the things that we do, of course, you can always Google anything and probably get a lead. Thank goodness I don't know what we did before Google. Sometimes you just have to check around, and old timers usually are the best source, just word of mouth. So-and-so knows about this, or so-and-so had one that looks something like that. So usually that's a good way to reference and get an idea starting point. Anyway.
All right. Talk a little bit about the different companies that were in here, say, 100 years ago, 150 years ago. The timber companies, the coal, any interesting personalities or people of that nature?
Well, one of the very important early industries that was actually, there was a water power canal that was dug right beside of our present facility, went right through our museum grounds, right by our bank building. And it was, the most proper name was the Red River Iron Works and Forge. This was a all water powered when it first put in, and we're talking about 1804.
This is off the Red River, the water off the Red River.
Water off the Red River, and it was run by a water power canal, and all this machinery that just really within stone's throw of our main centerpiece, the bank building, and it was a massive ironworks. It was known far and wide, Red River Ironworks and Forge.
And no electricity at all. It was, everything was running.
All this was water
pulley off the water power thing.
Yes, and this was even before you could get a steam engine locally. We're talking about very early 1800s.
Wow.
So, yeah, so they had to go to a water source. That's the reason they picked our site, because Red River makes such a big meander, almost meets itself coming back around Clay City, and this was the place to build a water-powered ironworks to run a blast furnace. We had the second blast furnace in the state of Kentucky.
Good heavens.
Yeah, and then, of course, with the water-powered...
Was it a big stone thing like at Fitchburg?
Smaller, but the same type principle. And the same type of sandstone structure, yes.
Wow.
And of course, they put in a water-powered grist mill. And, of course, one of our special treats this past year has been the people that had the millstone that was made locally.
And now it's GEICO's Motorcycle Rules of the Road. Before you ride, make sure your mirrors are clean and adjusted properly. And if you're going on a group ride, make sure the lead biker knows where they're going.
Ed, quick question. Where are you taking us?
Oh, I have no idea. Well, am I the leader? Because I was following that dude with the red helmet. Where is he?
And the rule to saving on motorcycle insurance is, in 15 minutes, GEICO could save you 15% or more.
A conglomerate, because also nearby, within 3 miles of our museum building, the Red River Stone Quarry knob and the Red River Millstone Quarry was famous. It was sought after in the late 1700s by the early settlers, and a lot of these stones are actually mined. And that's one of our prime collections. It's like Ovi said, it's millstones. We've got
so a bunch. Talk about the kind of stone that has to come out of the ground to be a millstone. It's kind of an aggregate.
It's an aggregate. It's a conglomerate, and it has quartz pebbles, and it has obviously really good silicon oxide and also lime cementing material to make it very compact and hold the edge real good so it can grind corn into cornmeal.
Right.
And our local millstones here, it's close to the museum that were quarried there, they're not so good for grinding wheat into flour. Those would usually come out of France and got exported over here, brought back as ballast on ships.
Yeah, as ballast.
Once a meal, local meal, got established with the local conglomerate, then they would, a little later, they'd add the other. So
you're telling me that some of those millstones up there that you've got were actually quarried in France?
That we have some of the segmented French flint. Yeah, but that would be brought over, and you're right.
As a ballast stone.
Yeah.
On a ship.
And that was all over the United States. They did that. Because they have the best material in the world.
Well, there. Bill was telling me that all the streets in Liverpool, England are made out of ballast stones.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's what he told me.
So that's great.
It's interesting. Yeah. Let me ask you this question. Indians in the area, do you have records of Native American settlement, historic Native American, not prehistoric? We're going to get to that when we talk about the archaeology, but historic Native American settlement at all, or is there any?
Well, at the time that Euro-Americans entered the scene here, then as far as permanent settlements, they had been abandoned here, even though a lot of the testimonies do verify and prove beyond any doubt that there were many bands of Native American indigenous people still around. And they, of course, it would not have been wise, and when we started selling their land and basically taking it from them, for them to have a permanent settlement, although at Indian Fields, Iskivakathika was a permanent settlement in the mid-1700s.
Is that on Lubbergrud Creek over that way?
It's between Lubbergrud and Upper Harrods Creek.
Okay.
It's set right above Upper Harrods Creek at a place.
And that was the man that came here, Robert Rambo, that did the one-man play, talking about that Iskivakathika.
Yeah, he was reenacting the Cherokee Peace Chief.
Yes.
And the village here at Iskivakathika, that's now other side of Golf's Corner, Indian Fields.
That's in Clark County.
It was Clark County, and it was a Shawnee village, basically.
Golf's Corner. Golf is an old name.
Very old. Mr. Golf, he was a hunter with Daniel Boone.
Right. Okay. Gosh, the history. I get chills thinking about it.
You mentioned Lubbergrud, I don't know if you're familiar, but supposedly Daniel Boone named that and was
from Gulliver's Travels.
Reading Gulliver's Travels, camped out there.
Yeah.
And of course, Pilot Knob, where he first saw the bluegrass and the large Indian village you're talking about, is in the county here. And you can see seven counties from that beautiful hike that is maintained by the Nature Conservancy, I think.
Yeah. And we got one over in Madison County. A Pilot Knob there, and Station Camp Creek, Jackson County, and Estill. Supposedly Daniel Boone spent a winter down in there, but that's getting off the subject. Let's go back to you really can't talk about Powell County without a wider discussion of central and eastern Kentucky. And this is a gateway area from the bluegrass into the mountains. And I'm sure that is noted and understood in the way you've done the museum.
Yes, we feel like it is. And a lot of our collections hinges on that the gateway exhibition to someone stopped there and they haven't got up into the gorge natural bridge area yet. Well, we hopefully can enlighten them on what they will see when they get a little further east and southeast, and also see a lot of relics that will be representative of the history that they will be in there.
Right. The trade, so much of the trade came out of the mountains, like timber and coal, for instance. You had the railroad that came through, and it would go down into the bluegrass and to the Kentucky River, maybe at Frankfort or somewhere near there, and I guess on to the Ohio.
Yes, one of the things that we have in our depot, which come out of Slade, it was rotting down, and it had been given to us a few years earlier, and we finally got to move it down and restore it. And in that depot, which is all got about
it's a train depot.
It's a train depot, yes. And where Slade now is really become known, you know, as a center point of getting off the parkway there and everything.
The recreational stuff for the rock climbing and things.
Right. And the railroad, they really capitalized in the 1890s when it entered the natural bridge and torrent areas. They capitalized on tourism.
Oh, they had hotels up that way.
Had a big hotel. They had a big dance floor. It was just unprecedented on post.
Yeah, there's a story that they had a large basket, and they would have opera and or preaching or whatever, and they would lower the speaker down in that basket to entertain the crowd below on the platform he was talking
about.
Yeah,
that's the big dome there at Torrent. So it was this was a gateway area for a lot of these things that went on farther up the river, if you will, farther up the trail in the mountains. And Elizabeth, what did you think about all this?
You're the historian in the crowd. I'm just running the board today and minding my own business.
Is it fascinating to you?
It is. And what I think is really great is that it's probably information that a lot of our listeners have not been exposed to. And they really should come up and to Clay City, to the Red River Museum, once they get there themselves put back together after the flood.
You don't have visitors right now, do you?
Well, I mean, we'll show them what's going on. We don't care. Just that it's a total, it's the worst wreck it's ever been in with the flood. We've got 8 buildings, and the river was anywhere from 10 inches deep to 4.5 feet. And 6 out of the 8.
It came up overnight.
Yeah. Unbelievable. It's like a flash flood, which Red River rarely does that.
Right. Well, you know what? It might have temporarily affected some things that are going on, but it hasn't diminished the heartfelt will of those who are involved in the museum. That's the thing that is so important. We're going to talk a little more about some other things that people at the museum do in the second half of the hour.
And their main showtime is May to...
The first, usually on a regular schedule, we're open the first weekend in May through the last in October on Saturday and Sunday afternoons from noon to 5.
All right, we got to jump right there. We'll tell the rest when we come back. You're listening to the Tom Dupree Show with Larry Meadows and Ovi Holland. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
$1,400 per person
is not enough.
Enough is never enough. So let's double it.
We're going to double
your stimulus. Up to 6 chances a day to win $1,400.
We doubled
on News Radio 630 WLAP.
Hi, this is Tom Dupree. What actually makes a difference in life? Is it Bitcoin? Is it gold? Perhaps it's bonds, racehorses? No. Of any economic entity in which you can invest, the ones which actually make a difference are corporations. They are maligned, taxed, demonized, run by left-wing ideologues, but still, they must produce a profit. They cannot afford to invest in things the way that government does. Their investments must show a profit. Their investments must be productive. We believe our clients like to think their investments are being productive, both for society and for them. For a free review of your retirement investment portfolio, call Dupree Financial Group at 859-233-0400 and be sure to listen to the Tom Dupree Show Saturdays at 7 a.m. at News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.
At this very moment, the biggest stars in music are clearing their calendars. Travel arrangements are being made. Because on Thursday, May 27th, they'll be on stage in person at our 2021 iHeartRadio Music Awards. Join us as we celebrate the songs and artists you loved and listened to the most on iHeartRadio in 2020. Our 2021 iHeartRadio Music Awards, Thursday, May 27th.
This is big.
Watch it live on Fox.
The journey on the path to spiritual enlightenment is personal. And as you'll hear on the Astray podcast, it can also be deadly. Join filmmaker Caroline Slaughter on the podcast as she uncovers the disappearances and deaths that have befallen Westerners who have taken a spiritual pilgrimage to India.
Don't go to India, because this is a Venus flytrap for your vulnerability.
Listen to Astray on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You think it won't happen to you. You're in a rush, so you start speeding and you cut off a car or truck. You didn't think much of it. Until now. The Kentucky State Police are participating in TACT, the Ticketing Aggressive Cars and Trucks campaign. So the next time you're driving next to a car or a big truck, remember, it's not a race. Leave space and be safe. This message is brought to you by the Kentucky State Police and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration.
Mix of sun and clouds across the area on this Saturday. Overall, a fairly nice day. Temperatures are deep into the 70s for that afternoon high. Severe thunderstorms possible later tonight. From the WKYT First Alert Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Chris Bailey.
Broadcasting live 24/7 from the heart of Big Blue.
GEICO presents Motorcycle Word of the Day. Today's word is tank slapper. Is a tank slapper used to describe a handlebar wobble? Or is it a motorcycle joke that is so funny you just have to slap the gas tank with your hand as you laugh, as in...
Oh man, Daryl told me a great joke last night. It was hilarious. It was something about a dog wearing sunglasses. I wish I could remember. It was a real tank slapper.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more. GEICO presents Motorcycle Word of the Day. Today's word is tank slapper. Is a tank slapper used to describe a handlebar wobble? Or is it a motorcycle joke that is so funny you just have to slap the gas tank with your hand as you laugh, as in...
Oh man, Daryl told me a great joke last night. It was hilarious. It was something about a dog wearing sunglasses. I wish I could remember. It was a real tank slapper.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Blue Nation, this is News Radio 630 WLAP, an iHeartRadio station.
It's all about the nose. It's your air filter, the first line of defense against bacteria and viruses. If too many germs get stuck in your nose, guess what? You get sick. That's why it's so important to keep your nose clean, just like washing your hands. Now there's a better way to keep your nose clean and help your body protect itself. It's called Navage Nasal Care. Navage uses powered suction to flush out allergens, mucus, bacteria, and viruses. At Navage.com, CVS, Walgreens, Bed Bath, Target, and Rite Aid. Navage, N-A-V-A-G-E.
Eric was way behind on his taxes.
I owed a lot of money to the IRS, almost $15,000.
Eric called Optima Tax Relief.
When Optima Tax got involved, the calls would stop, the threats would stop. It was easy, like, one, two, three.
Optima Tax Relief took care of Eric's problem.
And now my debt is clean. I don't owe anything.
Call Optima Tax Relief for a free consultation. Call 800-386-9945. 800-386-9945.
Optima Tax Relief.
There are new forms of the coronavirus. Just what we needed, right?
Yeah. So we wondered, are we doing enough to protect ourselves and our son?
Turns out we are. Because things like well-fitted masks, 6 feet of space, avoiding crowds.
All of that still works. And getting vaccinated, you know, when it's our turn.
COVID may not be letting up,
but neither are we.
We can do this. Learn more at cdc.gov/coronavirus. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
If you're wondering what's going on in the markets these days, you're not alone. It seems the conventional metrics of discerning value in markets has been thrown out the window. Perhaps it may help to look at interest rates, which are lower than ever. They are lower than in my dad's time in the business and in my granddad's time. Interest rates can justify valuations in the stock market, and lower interest rates can support higher valuations. So maybe things aren't that crazy. We talk about stuff like this at Dupree Financial Group. For a no-obligation review of your retirement investment portfolio, call us at 859-233-0400 or go to DupreeFinancial.com. And be sure to listen to the Tom Dupree Show Saturdays from 7 to 9 a.m. at News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com. That's Dupree Financial Group at 233-0400.
630 WLAP.
I'll never stand up taller. Could it be that nothing's gonna change when the muscles around my brain start to make me feel insane? I think it's time to get on the road again. Could it be that I am getting older? Could it be that everything is changing? I look over my body and the lines upon my face, and I think it's time to get on.
And we are on the road again this week. We are coming to you from Clay City with Larry Meadows and Ovi Holland of the Red River Museum. And covering different ground than we usually cover.
There's no D at the end of his name. Holland.
Why is it? Why do I even set myself up for this? Always got something, don't you, Tom?
All right.
Did I spell it? I didn't spell it. I said
anyway.
It.
God.
Call me anything but late for supper.
I can do that.
Oh, I don't know why I get cracked up over stuff like that.
It's okay. Called you poke the bear. What
yeah,
happened.
That's it. All right. There's a feature of what is done by the museum, which is not inside the museum walls. It never will be. It's outside the museum. And I think it's maybe the most noble of the museum's efforts, although it's, you know, who's to say. But it involves looking at different sites around in several counties in this area and in this county where Native peoples from several thousand years ago have inscribed, typically on rocks, usually not on paper, different elements of artistic expression, if you will, and regarding sometimes bear tracks, sometimes human feet, and other kinds of things. These are a petroglyphic record of people that lived long before we did, outside of recorded history, and yet right here in this vicinity. And there are professionals in the business that do what they do, and then there's the museum that kind of does what it does. And it's all volunteer. It's not professional. It's not paid. It's people simply trying to learn and discover what they can about these interesting people. And the rocks, as Larry has said, the rocks talk to us. We don't know much, if anything, about these people that lived before, other than the things that they wrote on the rocks, which doesn't tell us all that much. But it's been a fascination, I know, of Larry, and Ovi, I'm sure you've been fascinated with it also, for a number of years. And if something is that interesting to keep someone's attention for decade after decade, there's something to it. So pick it up.
Well, one of the interesting things you talked about, the footprints and the carvings and so forth. Of course, there's several, and I'll let Larry elaborate on some of those. But one of the things that I thought was particularly interesting, there's in two or three different places, there's human footprints carved out with only four toes. So I don't know if there was a four-toed carver going around back in the day, or if maybe they had a deity that that had four toes. But I thought that was particularly interesting. Of course, Turkey Tracks and some of those. But and you talked about this being a kind of a crossroads of Native Americans. There were several tribes that used this as a hunting ground and passed through. As a matter of fact, Larry has told me a story about the Warriors Trace that actually went very near where we're sitting right now. There was a ford, a crossing place not far up the river. So a lot of the Shawnee, the Mohawks, Ojibwe, several tribes that use this and travel.
Those are significantly northern type tribes. They're up New York State and places.
Right, right. The Mohawks, but now the Mohawks were, they roamed some too. So
did they?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, Larry.
Well, yes, the Warrior's Path is there are different Warrior's Path, and we have a land grant and even Red River real close to what that's always said to here is one up Red River by the name of the Fife. It still goes by Fife Lick today. However, the main north south Warrior's Path that is referred by a lot of the early writers in early chronicles of our history is it's kind of I sort of compare that to I-75 going north and south now. It's just a very well-known, many, many Native Americans and Indians at that time used it. It had to be known for many places. There is very interesting theories about when you get into why was it so prominent? Well, it may actually been that Mastodon and Mammoth and other extinct mammals of that time used that first, even before the bison, American bison, at the time that our people started coming in here. They didn't realize that the buffalo barely beat them here as far as migration, because it really wasn't in the Rockchilder people that we study. It just almost never do you find a buffalo or bison bone.
Gosh.
But, yeah, it's trails and stuff. They were well-known back then. Streams were used to trails, too, and that's just part of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. I want to ask you, Larry, about some of the shelters themselves without disclosing any locations or any particular type of thing that it is. In general, do you find that these shelters, typically they're under an overhang, rock overhang, were places wherever the art was made or the carvings, if you will, would that also be where they lived in their home, or would they go to another place to do this and then live somewhere else?
Well, according to the archaeological interpretation by professionals and avocationists like us as well, there's actually, you're right, there's double meaning on that. Sometimes there seems to be patterns that they might have been done some carvings here spiritualistically and maybe not lived so much there.
And then it's kind of like that was their church. Was their church.
Like a church. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then in other times, you'll have a big shelter, and it's just laced with carvings. And, of course, in a more broader scheme, in rock art includes two things, the carvings of petroglyphs, and also includes pictographs, paintings. Native American paintings that are interpreted to be the real stuff are pretty rare in Kentucky. There are a few. They're extremely rare in the Red River Gorge area, although that is one of the most plentiful petroglyph places as far as population per square mile.
A pictograph is painting on the rock.
Painting on the rock.
Petroglyph is carving
in the rock.
Into the rock.
Right.
Let me ask you this question, either one of you. When was that aha moment for you as members of the museum of how much categorization and cataloging that there was to be done in this area. You must have had a moment where it hit you like a ton of bricks, like, wow, we could spend our whole lives doing this.
Well, the big impact that we had by Dr. Fred E. Coy Jr. of Louisville and his best friend Thomas C. Fuller was in May of 1970 when they first visited the Red River Museum. And before that, we'd had some of our friends tell us about some rock art sites, and we had visited them. But it was then, and they had already started a statewide research on the subject, because the reason was, and Dr. Coy was an orthopedic surgeon by profession, that he could not find any literature written on the subject about Kentucky rock art. Although there had been a lot in West and Southwest United States and of course, naturally in South America and other parts of the world. So he had really adopted this. So we just fell in with that we wanted someone to be a leader of us. We like to scout. We like to find. We like to talk to people. But this gave us a reason. So it was really 1970s when the real light flipped on. And from that time on, we've continuously, everybody comes in the museum. If they're a climber or something, we start communicating with them. And then working with the Forest Service and with the professional archaeologists through the many years, that is the way that we accumulated so many rock art sites in the state of Kentucky. Our deal was mostly in the state of Kentucky. We've been to a few outside of the state. So really it was Dr. Coy and Tom Fuller who began that. This gave us this real reason to focus on it, and we focused ever since.
And the book, Rock Art of Kentucky.
That's the name of it, yes.
Resulted from this.
Yes.
That's Dr. Coy, Fuller. You're one of the authors of it, and then another fella. And so there are four people that basically wrote that book, and it came out, what, back in the 80s?
Yeah, it was 87 or something. But the one point I will make is my name is only on there, not as a writer. I wanted the Red River Museum to be the name. And then the Kentucky Heritage Council was the editor, and they said, we can't have an organization. We've got to have a name. So Ben's, I was the contact person and got to be, you know, friends with Dr. Coy and Tom Fuller and Dr. Schwager. And of course, they're all deceased because they were much older than me. And that was the reason that my name's on there. Not taking any credit for me doing that kind of work, writing a book of that nature. They did a great job, and I've just, my name really should be Red River Museum. That just wasn't allowed, so that's the reason.
Okay. Now, one of the things that I wanted to notate, if you will, or bring about is the thing that is the need to get some younger people involved in the efforts here, because, you know, you're going to be 80 next year.
Yep.
And there are different people. And tell me, are you getting some young folks in on this effort?
Yes, we are. I think in the last couple of years, over here has been very instrumental in getting more young interest in that, and through different sources, we see a lot more youthful interest to take over, because that's going to happen anytime.
That's good.
Yes, we got to have that, or we can't survive. We got to have the youth, and they're much. It seems to me they're much more interested now than they were 10 years ago.
Right, Ovi. What would your thoughts be on that?
Of course, the only problem with the younger people are it's hard to sometimes to get them interested unless there's a natural interest anyway. But it seems like most of the older people are the ones that know where the sites are. So it's a good blend of the two. You have to have the younger generation to pass this on, and you've got to utilize the older people to remember where the sites are and tell you about them. And a lot of times it's word of mouth. Well, so-and-so told me that there was one back in this holler or wherever. But for me, the most interesting part, the thing that really piqued my interest, was visiting a shelter. We actually, our group, looked at this and cataloged it. And there was a very small shelter, but it had a, we call them hominy holes. And I was fascinated by that as a child. And I think they were given that the misnomer of hominy hole by Funkhauser and Webb. Was that right?
Yes.
And they surmised that it was to grind corn, but it's just fascinating to me that you see them in several places, several states even, these deep holes, 2 to 4 inches in diameter, sometimes larger, and they might go down as far as 2.5, 3 feet. And so it doesn't make sense. And we're trying to find out why they did those. Was it to grind food? Was it to store food? It's all just conjecture at this point.
Is what's the feeling like when you roll up on something that maybe nobody's ever seen before, other than the people who made it 7,000 or 8,000 years ago?
Well, I guess you would probably feel a lot like Daniel Boone did the first time he saw this place. You're fascinated and interested, and he's got that feeling of discovery that you're the first eyes that's been laid upon this. So, and of course, along with that goes the wonderment, you know, and then how was this done, and why?
Sure. Okay, the museum, and let's get honest, the museum sustained a little bit of damage in the flooding here in the last 3 or 4 weeks. And I want to make an appeal to people to maybe get interested in this and consider donations and things of that nature, although this isn't what this show's about. It's not about trying to beg for money or that kind of thing, but I would be remiss if we didn't at least discuss that the museum's got to have some work done and things that have to be done to repair the flood damage. And you're dealing with an older building. Sometimes there are things that begin to go downhill in that building. Despite its historic charm, older buildings have stuff that goes wrong with them. So we're dealing with some of that right now. And just talk a little bit about what the scope of it is, what some of the financial needs might be.
Well, I alluded to this earlier, but it seems like the more we get into it, the more we find out that needs to be done. And part of it is flood damage. Part of it is the age of the building. One of the things we found out just this morning is that some of the brick on the inside wall have separated and are falling because they had supports. They built the outside shell very strong. The inside was close to the ground. And, of course, we've added air conditioning and some modern conveniences and had to work around some of those limitations. But we have found out that we had to replace the roof. We did that last year. There was, because of the leaky roof, there were some drywall issues. We had to repair those. And had just got ready to open up, hopefully for this season, the COVID permitting, of course. And we had this flood. Now, I don't know, the river's been up in the museum several times. And Larry mentioned earlier about a log canal going right beside the museum. The lake, the river basically makes a large oxbow around the town. And, of course, the water tries to shortcut right beside the museum. And that's part of the damage. We had a lot of rushing water that is tremendous force. So we had some outside damage from that. We're still surveying, and we don't know the full extent, but about half of the floor joists are decayed and or have termite infestation, and we have to replace those from the floor up. So,
All right, if we're getting close to the end here. If you wanted to help, where would you send donations?
Well, you can send them to the Red River Museum, Clay City, Kentucky, and that's P.O. What's that P.O. box?
P.O. 517.
Okay. To send it to that. And you can also log in on the Facebook page, the Red River Museum, And there's information there about the ongoing efforts, and you get more information, the address and so forth, if you want to do that.
Yeah, the museum, it's just a great organization. And listen,
the P.O. Box was what again?
517,
and that's Clay City, Kentucky.
40312.
Perfect.
40312.
40312.
All right. Listen, sorry we couldn't go longer. I could go 2 hours with y'all. You're that good, by the way.
Larry, it's just like you said, Mr. Britannica, the walking encyclopedia.
Yeah, we didn't hardly tap into his thing.
No.
Well, we'll have to come back again when you get the itch to come on the road again, Tom.
That'll be next week.
Yeah, or maybe tomorrow. Who knows? Hey, listen, we'll be back the next hour with our financial guys. We'll be back in Lexington to bring you the Tom Dupree Show. So stay tuned. We're powered by Dupree Financial Group. We'll talk to you in a minute.
Come on, there's wood beside the fire. Come on, like a moth into the flame.
Always just minutes away from the latest news around town and around the world.
You need to know what's going on.
News Radio 630 WLAP.
If you're wondering what's going on in the markets these days, you're not alone. It seems the conventional metrics of discerning value in markets has been thrown out the window. Perhaps it may help to look at interest rates, which are lower than ever. They are lower than in my dad's time in the business and in my granddad's time. Interest rates can justify valuations in the stock market, and lower interest rates can support higher valuations. So maybe things aren't that crazy. We talk about stuff like this at Dupree Financial Group. For a no-obligation review of your retirement investment portfolio, call us at 859-233-0400 or go to DupreeFinancial.com. And be sure to listen to the Tom Dupree Show Saturdays from 7 to 9 a.m. at News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com. That's Dupree Financial Group at 233-0400.
Geico presents Motorcycle Word of the Day. Today's word is gremlin. Is a gremlin an unknown and persistent mechanical issue? Or is it something large that gets caught in your teeth when you ride with your mouth open? As in,
man, I gotta stop singing 80s power ballads when I ride. Ugh, keep getting gremlins in my teeth. See?
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.